Hey everybody, welcome to Athlete on Fire. Scott Jones here. As you know, I was recently out in Tahoe for the Spartan Media Fest, and ATP Science hooked us up with some amazing guests out there. The one that I got to interview in this instance was Dr. Don Vaughn. He is out of California, went to Stanford, neuroscientist. He focuses on a lot of other pieces of science, augmented performance, empathic bias, machine learning, human perception, all kinds of different things. But we really focused on the neuroscience and how that could help, or how people could use that to be better athletes, be better runners, ultra runners, and how we could use that in other aspects of our life. So we had a nice laid back conversation. He has a pretty cool talk over on YouTube. If you just type in neurohacking Don Vaughn, you will see his Rewiring Your Brain talk on TEDx UCLA, which is pretty cool. Just talking about neuroplasticity and how our brain can change based on new experiences that we have. And we kind of dive into that a little bit as that pertains to trying new challenges as we get older and as we're looking for challenges physically and mentally and otherwise. So that is the basics of the talk. Hope you guys enjoy it. We just get right into it. No big intros during the conversation. We just sat down and started chatting. So it's pretty sweet. Thanks a lot, guys. Hope you enjoy.
Definitely.
All right. So we're here with Dr. Don Vaughn. I feel like I have to enunciate that very well for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And, has this been a lifelong thing here? How long have you been a doctor?
A couple years now. I don't know. Yeah. And I started doing, I've kind of had a circuitous path, and then, you know, I started when I was 15 actually doing neuroscience research, just kind of came out of something, like a high school science day, and sort of I got a mentor and it just snowballed into a bigger and bigger thing. And I spent years doing research before deciding I definitely wanted to go and get a PhD. So
yeah.
Then, you know, like with a lot of things in life, there's these tracks that are easy to do, and then there's the sort of less common ways of doing it. And I fell in that one.
That is cool. So 15-year-old getting into neuroscience. This is the first thing I want to do. Define neuroscience, because I think everybody uses that fairly.
Everybody freely. Loves, yeah. Anyways, neuroscience is the studying of the brain or the nerves, which includes more than the brain, but principally it focuses on the brain, which is different than, you know, neuropsychology, which is actually sort of interacting more with patients, or neurology, which is diagnosing actual medical diseases of the brain and trying to do something about it, based on whatever interventions you have. So neuroscience is really trying to just understand it, because you can't treat something you don't understand, at least not very well.
Yeah. So in your 15-year-old brain, what was the catalyst? Like, what really interested you enough to start researching it?
I honestly just didn't want to go to school that day, and they had a high school science day. I was kind of a punk. Maybe I still am, but they said, oh, you can take the day off of school if you go to this off-site high school science day thing. So I said, okay, I'm in. And so then it was really boring. It was terrible. It was like, you know, you pour the red beaker into the green beaker and you get a brown beaker, and they, whoa, amazing science. And at the end of the day, the very last talk was by this guy named Dr. David Eagleman, and he was just talking about how incredible it is that, you know, this 3 pounds of wet stuff in your head, all your hopes and dreams and aspirations somehow are created. Your reality right now, we're looking at each other, you know, speaking and having this whole environment around us in beautiful Squaw Valley. Your listeners are at home or in their car listening to this and having this, you know, experience of us having this conversation. It's kind of effortless and it just happens. Like, how does that happen from 86 billion neurons in your head? And I've just been honestly endlessly fascinated with trying to understand all the different circumstances that affect our brain, what it looks like when it's working, and how to fix it when it doesn't work.
Yeah. That's it. I'm just sitting here thinking I have 2 boys that are 6 and 8. Mm-hmm. If they could be as rebellious as you, I would be a very happy dad. So, no, that's all. So, you guys are here with Harley Davidson. I know you did a study with those guys, and yeah, it all kind of ties into neuroscience and fairly interesting. We were just kind of, me and, Chelsea, right? Yeah, we're just kind of joking around about just writing and stuff, and the science is going to probably get more wives on board with riding bikes. I just thought she sent me the little PR release, and tell me about that a little bit and how what you found so far.
Yeah, you know, I want to understand as many things that are toolkits for affecting the brain, because I think we're in a time of, it'll be a mental health epidemic as you look back on it in a few years. More and more people are, I mean, Alzheimer's is just skyrocketing, depression and anxiety at record levels. And so it's really, I actually say my standpoint is that it's for a good reason, which is that we're fixing a lot of other stuff. Like, you don't You can transplant hearts. You can fix all sorts of problems that happen with your body. But when your nervous system isn't quite right, then that's a big hit to wellness. And so more and more, I've just been interested in anything that people report might have a positive effect. I've done some studies with patients who have anorexia nervosa and body dysmorphic disorder, and trying to understand there's changes in visual pathways or changes in low level processing of the world. And so given that seems to be the truth, like, what therapies would work? What interventions? If it's talk therapy, great. Cognitive behavioral therapy is good. And all the way down the line to brain stimulation and trying to fix pathways that are broken, because we are inseparable from our biology. If your brain doesn't work quite right, then, the rest of you doesn't. So just that idea of just exploring, like, what's the limits of what, humanity can do, and what affects the brain and what doesn't. And so I heard for a long time that motorcycle riders, they talk about bikes not just as a fun thing to do, but actually something that gets their head right.
Yeah.
And a lot of science starts that way. Anecdotally, you notice things and you just follow up and you study them. And so Harley and I, we talked about if this study could even be done. It took me 4 months of engineering work just to figure out, can you put an EEG on somebody's head under a helmet while they're on their bike with wind noise, with their engine electrodynamics firing? Because you're measuring, the brain signal you capture is a millionth of a volt.
Right.
A millionth of a AA battery, basically.
Yeah, all this interference.
Oh, yeah, tiny. So it's, your brain is an electrical organ and cells fire, and you got to pick up these little tiny whispers of what's going on. So after 4 months, we figured it was possible to do if you did it right. And so we got about 70 riders to come out and ride, and while they had an EEG on, and we measured their brain activity while they rode, while they drove a car, and while they were doing a control experiment, just sitting there and looking at the same amount of track. And then we had them do some hormone testing before and after as well, so looking for changes in cortisol, adrenaline, those types of things.
Nice.
And we monitored heart rate. So what we found was it was interesting. What we found was that overall, participants showed a 27% reduction in a cortisol metric, which is related to stress. So after a 20-minute ride, you see this hormonal change, which is pretty damn fast. To be able to measure that, in this case, it was out of saliva and out of urine. And that your body has that, the switch of changing what kind of chemicals it puts into your bloodstream based on what's going on. So for some amount of people, it's that idea that it's a stress relief. I kind of believe that that's probably the substrate for it.
Right.
And then, from a mental level, we had these EEGs going on, and I don't know how technical you get with it, but
yeah.
We were just looking for like brain activity changes and how you processed your environment. And what it looked like was that riders were able to tune out distraction when they were on the bike. Like, they were able to really focus and get in the zone. Much like right now, there's actually 3 podcasts going on around us, but you and I are totally in sync.
Right.
Your brain's effortlessly tuning out coffee shop effect style stuff. And the problem is, as you get older, you actually see that ability goes down.
Oh, wow.
So you have, there's a system for paying attention, and then there's another system for tuning out distraction. And I think that one's key, and that one's highly affected, I think, by training and also by age. And so when people, as they get older, say, "Oh, it's loud in here and I can't concentrate," no one's just acting crazy out of stuff. Like, it's because their brain is serving them up something. It's a different experience than you and I experience on a daily basis. And so that ability to tune out distraction is key. So something about riding that I think being able to do that just puts people in a better mindset. It's this thing about, and it's not just external distraction, right? It's those internal thoughts that we all have. You go through the day and you have your internal critic telling you, you should have done that, could have done that. Oh, your friend's doing that. And I don't know, maybe people have it to different degrees, but everybody reports something around it. And if it's really severe in depression, we call it ruminations. If you have it really severely in OCD, we call it obsessions and compulsions. So all along the spectrum, there's these things going on. So there's something about finding like a mental routine, whether it's riding or sports or whatever you do, about being able to have time where you can tune out your internal and external distractions and have just enough ability to focus where you don't have that internal critic running.
Yeah.
That I think really cultivates wellness, and you see it sort of across the board. And just not to ramble on too long, but we saw such interesting results that we got in touch with some X Games athletes. Olympic athlete Scotty James, he's an incredible snowboarder, and he also rides a Harley, and Lizzie Armanto, and she's so cool, and she's such a great skateboarder. And so we actually scanned their brains while they were on a Harley, and also while they were doing their sports, and it looked very similar. So I think it's not some, like, out of left field completely different way of doing something, it's probably like the same kind of routine about just what is the thing for you that gets you in the zone? What's your brain look like in there? And how do we get you in there more?
What was the ride? Was it straight away? Was it?
Yeah, a mix. You know, you want to be careful when you pick out an experiment not to bias the results. Right. So you're like, do I do city traffic or do I do a winding road or do I freeway? And I was going through all these things. We picked two different courses so that we were sort of hedging our bets. One of them was, just a mix of straightaways and winding roads. I wanted to do a minimum of intersections. So none of them had any intersections, just so you don't have stopping and, the concern that happens sometimes about like just at any intersection, do I turn left and the signal changes and all that.
Cortisol. Residuals off of that. Did you see improved over time, or did you guys test that? Or?
Such a good question. I would love to do that. If you want to fund that one, I'm all into it. Like it's very hard to get people to do anything over time. All of our studies, you recruit an initial cohort and you get massive attrition. So this was just you come in, you do it for that. It's pretty amazing of the motorcycle, right? I was like, we don't run people in the lab for more than 40 minutes, and they had this thing on their head for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Because it's very noisy, so I was like, I need to collect a lot of data in order to get the quality stuff and hedge out that noise. So we'd have them urinate before, or three times actually, before and after resting, driving, and riding a motorcycle.
Yeah.
So no idea about afterwards.
Yeah, just in my world with performance and sport and just... Yeah. Just general stress and
most hormones don't really, you have to change your mental routine in order to have a long-term effect on your equilibrium of hormones.
Right.
Cause something, is your hypothalamus triggering your pituitary and having secretions or changing, adrenal and gland production. It sort of starts the central processing unit, and whether you have access to it or not, that's sort of up to unclear, but at least like some amount of training probably does change stuff.
Yeah. That's cool. To kind of use that study and the concept of that study to something that we're here in Squaw for, which is the Spartan stuff.
Yeah.
I just ran that.
How was it?
I was so disoriented when I met you. It's very embarrassing.
No, you actually, it's funny. You seem pretty clear.
Oh, I just got jacked up, man.
Yeah.
So I'm got my charm.
Adrenaline
I'm
increase, heart rate increase.
I'm actually happy. Like everything's feeling better 3 hours later.
Yeah.
Usually it starts getting worse. So
Interesting.
But okay, so just talking about the nervous system, specifically your brain on an event like this. So I'll describe a little. Have you run Spartan before?
I haven't.
Okay, so you start out here, you go straight up the freaking mountain. Like 2 miles
that
straight
looks
up.
So hard.
It's brutal. And and then you have a couple walls you have to jump over, and then you get to the spot and you got a couple obstacles like monkey bar type stuff and heavy carries, and the carries aren't easy. You're carrying buckets of sand up mountains.
Oh.
And you're doing spear throw, and there's a lot of concentration and grip strength involved.
Yeah.
And then you're dealing with cold because it's windy and it's cold as hell, and sand's blowing in your eyes. And then they had an optional Spartan. You got soft on everybody today, by the way. They had an optional swim up there. And I looked at all these people passing the swim. I was like, this is if I sign up for an experience, you want to get the full experience. So, jumped into water, cold as hell, but it's warmer than the air temp, so I was good to go. And then you bomb down, so you have like this cold weather, you have all these variables, and you have a big bomb where you got the closest to any kind of flow state from a running standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to the bottom, and you start running on grass, and your brain thinks, okay, we're almost there. No, you're not. You got to do a bunch more grippy stuff, mm-hmm. and then you're getting close to it.
I saw that the full overhead straight away. That looked very difficult. I saw a lot of people falling on that.
Yeah, that's tough. And rope, it's a very grippy event. So you're trying to move energy from your hands to your legs mentally and like relax so you don't tense up so you can actually have the grip strength. And then you get, you come down the little finish thing. You got people on both sides kind of cheering you on, mm-hmm. and then you finish and then you get that's when I saw you basically.
Yeah.
So what's happening? You don't have to go through every part of that thing, but what's happening?
Yeah. Well, your hypothalamus is throughout the whole race. I have been a big proponent of the fact that most of what we do is unconscious.
Yeah.
Like, why is your hand, why were they in your lap, and then why did they go up here, and where are your feet, where they are, and you can ask your audience, like, where's your tongue in your mouth, or what's your foot feel like in your shoe, like, all these things your body just takes care of automatically for you, and only, like, the biggest headlines make their way up to your conscious brain to be like, oh, like, I didn't cook dinner tonight, or, other things that are really important. But otherwise, you can drive home and not even think about it now.
Yeah.
So your brain's job is to burn everything down into a routine that it can. It automate everything because it's expensive to learn new stuff.
Right.
And your brain, it's only 2% of your body mass, but it takes 20% of your energy.
Yeah.
So it's basically 10x everything else. It's expensive to have nerve cells. So the idea is that, you know, you want to build the right routines. And so I think a lot of this is, okay, what are the best routines I can build in that are, you know, automate everything you can from, you know, your steps or your form. And then when it's time to get on the course, in a lot of athletic events, you don't want to think at all. You only think when you have to, like, when you look at basketball, free throw shooting,
right.
Bounce, bounce, shot, or whatever the pre-shot routine is for a free throw. They do it the same every time because they want to trigger this cascade of neural events, like, okay, this neuron talks to this one, and this, so they are in the same flow state,
right.
Not to think. If you want to mess somebody up, you ask them, how do you do it?
Yeah.
And then you're in your head. So I think getting out of your head is key, and what I've heard today is sort of a variation on how to do that when you're there, either I don't know what your routine is, but some people like listening to music because that's just enough of an occupier to your brain that your thoughts don't run and you start thinking about stuff and overthinking it and your body is just taking charge.
Right.
Especially for an activity like this, which is high muscle endurance and form.
Yeah. If I'm thinking about like myself and clients that in the best practice, like you can't make people not listen to music. I think there's something to being able to figure out how to self-regulate in those situations.
So what do you do? What's your routine? Say, let's see, you're on the slope, you're running down.
For events, never listen to music. The only time I listen to music, it would be in the gym. Mm-hmm. It would be running a route around town that it's just, you know, for the workout, not for the experience.
Yeah.
I go warm up for 5-10 minutes.
But where's your brain at? Like, you're in the middle of it. You're in the middle of it. Are you thinking or not thinking?
I'm a sick person. I'm looking at other people suffering and just.
Oh yeah,
and relishing the fact that I look better than it gives me a boost to know that I'm not hurting as bad as they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And I try to have, you know, good posture, taking in things that are not right on my person, like the leaves blown.
Yeah,
over in the.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. That, which is like whatever your routine is. Some people it's music, some people it's. But how do you make your internal focus not ruminate on is your form right and you know how are you feeling, but to draw your attention away to something else is to occupy your brain just enough. Where you can optimally perform and rely on what you've already built up and trained for. And I think that's the difference between gold and silver.
Right.
It's not physicality. Especially, you know, I was looking at Scotty James and he was snowboarding. He had this absolutely, he was so focused. You could just tell. I knew he was going to win. And it was just a matter of tuning out the crowd and tuning out distraction, that internal performance anxiety that comes up. And then he just let his muscles take over. And we filmed this clip before for his athlete profile, and he was 96th percentile in our motorcycle study. Like if you measure him and his ability to focus when he was on his motorcycle, it was really high. And so I thought there was something about that he was really set up for success to be able to do that.
Kind of a side note, I've always had this curiosity because I played college baseball, so like a lot of hand-eye stuff, right?
Yeah.
I play baseball, basketball, football, all this stuff. This endurance stuff is just a sick curiosity as an adult, I guess. But athletes, talking about the ability to focus, I've always wondered if athletes getting less car wrecks, like take drugs and alcohol out of the picture for people who get in trouble doing that kind of stuff. I've always wondered like reaction time and like focus in general, top of mind type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything out there on that?
I don't know the data. If it exists, I don't know the data.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting because there's all the focus aspects, and then I would just guess that on average they're also more into external experiences than people who sit at home and play computer games, and
right.
So they might be driving more.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it'd be a very interesting trade-off.
Yeah.
That's the thing about neuroscience and all this stuff is, you know, we're just taking chips away. We understand so little of the brain that we're just taking our best. Okay, you're like, okay, well, how do we get people to have positive mental health? Maybe it's, you know, talking a lot, or maybe it's just having to build community, or maybe it's motorcycles, or whatever the little pieces are, we're trying to figure it out. But everything has these multivariate effects. It's like, oh, well, it helps your, you know, general life formula, and you feel good, but it's, you know, rough on your body in whatever sport you pick. And so you're like, well, is that a trade-off I'm willing to accept? Yeah, you know, up to that person. But I wish there was like people always say you should just swim all the time, and I'm like, wow. This doesn't work for me. It doesn't get me excited. So it's not something I do.
Agreed. It gets a little boring.
Yeah.
So I think going back to the Spartan thing. So one of the goals for athletes could be, first of all, you got to get some experience to know, like, when your body is hurting at a certain level, you've got to allow your mind to take over in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And that takeover might be distraction.
Yep.
It might be knowing that you've done efforts like this a million times so that it's not going to get worse. It's just going to probably stay the same for quite a while. I think having athletes go through
the best athletes in the world are amazing because they have this obsession and they have the repetition. So the repetition is not just in the skill, it's also in the knowing what to do with your head when you when things get really tough.
Yeah, I think mental fortitude is just as important as the physicality for when it's game day.
Right.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's I'm not trying to sound like we're a bunch of robots, but there is some engineering here, which is you just got to put in the hours, right? I mean, fine, there are stories of people who just show up and never practice and never train and do the whole thing at a grit.
It's super rare.
You just pick the strategy that works for you. I don't think it's going to work on average for everybody. So the idea of just – I'm big on, during the training session, just setting up your entire life and your entire environment to get from A to B. If you want to be at a higher level from where you are, usually if you think about it, you can figure out the exact steps you need to do. If it could be as simple as diet and exercise and training 4 hours a day, right? They're like, that's the roadmap. That would get me there. Where humans tend to fail and don't achieve their results is not setting up their environment to actually literally do it. It's simple, but hard. And, you know, maybe I'm preaching to the choir here, but like, you want to set it up such that every day you don't miss a single day of that training. Like, how could you set your life up in a way that makes that work? And I think a large component of that is just making it salient, something that you want to do. Another that might be easy for people, but another one that I've been talking about a lot is just, especially in this day and age, you got to set up a way to tune out distraction. You only have this is one of the most well-studied things about human psychology is we'd almost describe your willpower during a day as like a pool. You have a pool of it, and every time you got to make a choice. Oh, do you want this or this? You can do this or this. You want this or this. Which one of these, you know, places do you want to go? Like, oh, you want to see this person or not? You can text them. Like, just the amount of decisions we make during a day is pretty tremendous. And the more that you make, they show, or, you know, do from, it's just no different than a test. You're taking all these tests and you're like, A, B, or C, A, B, or C, A, B, or C. And they show that not only do you have less mental energy later to think about stuff and assess your performance, but also it translates to less physical energy.
Yeah.
So if you're getting pinged on your phone every 5 minutes and having to answer stuff.
Take the volume off, people. What's wrong? See, you haven't even pinged once over there. It's great.
Yeah. You know, like, it's crazy though.
I'm going to look at my, we all run our businesses off of our phone anyway. Like, you're going to look at it.
Yeah.
X amount of times a
day.
You don't have to know every 30 seconds.
That's what I mean. But being proactive and just like reduce the mental strain so that again, you can be set up to succeed at training and preparing and sculpting the right mental routines where it's not weird to sit down and focus for 3 hours and focus on training for 3 hours because you're like used to having an interruption.
No, it's awesome. I'm just thinking about Pavlov. If we could have some kind of Pavlovian fitness app where it beeps at a different ting and this ting means push-ups. That ting means squats.
We got an app idea coming out of this podcast. Yeah. All right, this is good.
I think I like it. Okay,
that's nice.
We'll talk later.
Yeah, okay.
I think HD will hook it up.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we were talking about this. So I was reading a book. Annie Grace is an addiction. Is about addiction. She spoke to alcohol a lot, but I was listening to it because of just food for clients. Food.
Yeah.
And talking about decisions. Is this true? I think it is the way you're talking, but. Small decisions take the same amount of mental capacity as big decisions, or is it a free, like what's, how do you kind of?
Yeah, complicated. You'd have to say what a small and big one is, but I would maybe suffice to say that small decisions even take a lot.
They do take a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it depends what kind of person you are. Some people really assess all the pros and cons, and other people rely on their emotional networks to just make a gut feeling.
Yeah.
That is why we have emotions. They're a quick and dirty calculation from our experience in the past and our hard wiring.
Maybe you can help my marriage.
Snake. Ah! Done. You don't. No thoughts needed, right?
Yeah. No, that's good. Yeah. No, I'm thinking about my marriage a little bit right now,
okay.
And why I'm so more irritable at the end of the day of working and answering literally thousands of questions a day, right?
Yeah.
And I literally before I walk in the house, I like pump myself up, like, don't be a dick, don't be okay.
Yeah. So I actually completely resonate with that and get it, and you're not alone.
No, I'm sure it happens everywhere, and I know, and like we've gotten good in our relationship. I'm like, hey, I know I'm irritable right now.
Yeah.
I do not want to use any mental capacity right now. You know, it's like driving across the country and it's time for dinner and nobody can make a decision because you've been making decisions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is there any way to strengthen that muscle or?
It's a two-part process. You're like kind of describing the pool of willpower we're just talking about, and you've had it drained the entire day. Question, 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 question. What do I do? And by the end, you're empty. And I think a lot of people are running around their life on empty, and you wonder why you're irritable, and you wonder why you have no space for other people's stuff. And then you come home, and it's not just, you know, relationships are tough. They don't just fill you up. It's equally your responsibility when the other person has a rough day to absorb their emotional energy or listen. And really listening is draining on your willpower.
Right.
If I put you in a brain scanner, and I got a paper coming out, about this in The Economist in a few weeks about,
oh, cool,
you look at empathy, you got a lot of your brain that fires when you show empathy for other people. It's not a cheap computation to,
right,
sit there and listen. So, now why can't you just listen? It's like, well, cause you're empty and you got nothing left and your brain literally does get tired. It takes energy. Your prefrontal cortex will burn itself out and you're like, it's just the thought of making more decisions and when somebody else explains their day, think about it. It seems so effortless, but you're like, okay, I put my head in their shoes. Here's what happened. What did they like that? Did they not like that? What could they have done differently? Do I have any mental, you know, judgments about that? Do I need to put those aside? Do I need to say those? Like, if I give this piece of advice, would they like it? If I give this piece, it's actually a lot's going on underneath.
Right.
So it takes a lot of energy. So if you're on empty, that's not going to work. And so I think the two-part strategy is, one, stop the draining. So remove attention factors that are draining on you all day. Find out, make sure you take breaks throughout your day for mental replenishment. And they're different for different people, I think. So for me, I just like chatting with you. This is great. My cup is full because I like being with other people and talking about science because I'm a dork and it's cool. And other people, I might just honestly getting some alone time. Maybe you don't like people. And I think one of the things I heard a lot in the Harley study that really sort of clued me into there might be something going on here is people thought that after their jobs, riding home on a bike was a good way to not show up for their spouses empty.
Right.
And then I've just seen it spiral, you know, relationships spiral, so you don't listen, and then they're pissed at you, and this whole massive fight happens because you didn't take care of your own mental health.
Yeah.
So you gotta find your mental replenishment routine, and that's how you fill the cup back up. So it's two-sided. Remove the draining, and find a way to fill it up.
It's huge. Yeah, like, one of the things that I do all the time is I ride my bike to the gym that we work with clients at. And it ensure either ride or walk, or it's 3 miles away, so it's not far. It ensures that I have at least a 20 to 40 minute buffer with something healthy,
mm-hmm,
for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have about 5 minutes. So I'm going to tie this in a little bit to the ultra runners I work with.
Great.
We work with a lot of ultra runners.
Yeah.
And the idea that this pool of willpower is depleting as the day goes on. So one fix to that would be get your runs in early in the day.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think.
Yeah, I think it might be why people enjoy running in the morning is that their tank's full.
Yeah. So they have that. And then the other thing is maybe realizing, I don't know if this is right based on what you said, but the mental fatigue can show up as physical fatigue oftentimes.
That was one of the most mind-blowing results. I remember looking at the paper, and it was that you basically had people do a bunch of math questions, and then they go lift weights, and they lifted less. And I was just like, well, here's the thing. It's that, you know, we like to think of physical performance as muscles, but, you know, what triggers those muscles to fire? It's always nerves. And so there's something about that neuromuscular junction that you have to have your nerve fire and strongly activate your muscle. And for example, as you train and lift weights, for the first couple of weeks, you don't build muscle. You build a stronger synaptic connection between your nerves and your muscles, and so you can upregulate fast.
I love that. We learned in my schooling, like 70% of your gains in the first 2-3 weeks were all nervous system gains.
Yeah.
It's coordination.
Yeah, so you're like, okay, so conservement energy in your brain by not having a whole bunch of random crap running around. I call it open, there's different words for it, but David Allen in Getting Things Done calls it open loops, and those are just, you have so much RAM in your head, and that's running in the background. So close them. Figure out whatever in their life is bothering them. And I used to do this self-development program called Landmark, and one of the things they said that I really liked was when someone shows up, like, what do you need to say to be fully present right now? And there's something so cathartic about just saying what's on your mind, whatever's bothering you, and doing whatever you can to get it complete, that then you can be fully present. And what we're finding out is that translates to physical performance. Your
nice.
Brain and your body, it sounds like it almost sounds trite now, but it didn't used to sound trite 10 years ago, but they're clearly connected.
Yeah.
So you got to get one right, you got to get the other right.
That's awesome. So to wrap things up, for people who are listening and they know that they're one of these people where their willpower is not there throughout the day,
yeah,
whether they're working with a coach who's prescribing things for them or if they're just trying to figure things out on their own, what are a couple things that they can do, like give people maybe a routine or some kind of idea that they can take away that's going to help with their mental function a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple, quick and dirty tips is just generally remove distraction. So it could be turning your phone. I have mine on do not disturb mode. No one can reach me except with a few people when they call so that I'm not constantly responding to stuff and getting drained. Also just setting up your environment in such a way that people don't interrupt you all the time. They know it's not okay. When you're training, it's just not, you gotta wait till the end.
Yeah.
You gotta, and remember, most of your life is habits. So really spend the time to sculpt the right habits, and everything comes through. If you are used to checking your phone a lot, that's going to show up. So I use the phone as an example, but anything else in your life, set up your environment to remove distraction. Make fewer choices. So another way to drain less. Don't, like, if you really don't care what kind of ketchup to get, then just buy it. Put it on Amazon or get it auto-subscribe and just have it show up. Yeah. Stop making stupid choices. We talk about choice being important. It's actually really taxing on you.
Yeah.
So that's another way. So find your mental replenishment routine. This is about building that reservoir back up, which is whether it's like whether it's writing or whether it's athletic activity, being with people, playing video games, whatever it is. Fine, just figure out what it is. And another one would be, I think people are really into quantified self for physical things, like what's your reaction time, what's your speed mile. Figure out a way to do that for your brain. Like, how full am I feeling? Check into yourself. How full do I feel right now? Do I feel like I could actually use my brain to do something right now, or am I totally exhausted?
Yeah.
And eliminate those activities to the degree that you can. So just if you were to walk away with one thing at the end of this, it would say, think of, you have free will to make the choices that you want to make, but you are subject to your biology.
Yeah.
And so keep your pool full, stop it from being drained, and do whatever you can to keep it full up.
Awesome.
That'll
I think for run, I mean, just keep it simple. Make sure that your body can serve your mind and vice versa. And,
yeah.
And people are going to be happier as runners and athletes out there.
And we're fine. Small things make a difference. Look, if taking a shot of vodka can alter your personality, that's one chemical in a, that only binds the some receptors in your brain. If you make small changes in your life, that can have massive cascading effects. So start easy. Eliminate the things that are easy to do.
Yeah.
And see the performance gains you get.
Awesome. We got Dr. Vaughn here. Thank you, Harley Davidson. Seriously, that's way more interesting than I thought it would be. So just a funny story.
Glad you were low baseline for it to be really low.
I was messaging just because I thought it'd be funny. I was messenger and I said, hey, this guy actually, it kind of makes me nervous to interview him. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So I talking about getting out of comfort zones and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was really fun. And, you guys, awesome.
It's really great. I mean, it's just great to hear from you because you're on the front lines. You're actually like translating this theory and you're discovering little pieces and parts. So I feel like we should keep it. If you find out something that's working, I'd love to try and figure out and understand how is that another tool that we can use and sort of generally use? Cause you see it in action. I'm just doing it in theory.
And we see it in action with a lot of, every level, like beginners who've never run a mile before, who want to run a 50K.
Yeah.
And that's 10X. Part that's really interesting to me. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, what I was going to say is, you had a TED talk. So
yeah.
I will link that up to the show notes because it's really cool. I think people will like that.
Awesome. Yeah. It's all about neuroplasticity and whenever you learn something new, your brain changes. So how do you do that the best? And, how can you do that when things aren't going as well as you want to sort of change those routines and break them?
Awesome. Awesome. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Really great to chat.
So that was it. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. If you like the idea of being able to use different tricks and tactics to become better at the endeavors that you are taking on, whether it's running an ultra or training for something that's just meaningful to you, like climbing mountains or just being able to be a better parent, stuff like that, we kind of dive into that. But we record all of our coaching calls over at Becoming Ultra. If you have not checked out Becoming Ultra, it is another podcast we do with newbie ultra runners, coach to client type stuff, how to's on the trail, mental aspects of it. And we're about to launch season 8 here in the next week or two. Go over to becomingultra.com. You can see the podcast link there. We're on iTunes, all the places you find your podcasts as well. So go check that stuff out. If it's something that you've kind of had an itch to do for a while, it might be a good time to sign up and have pretty much the best accountability you could imagine. So becomingultra.com is our other project. Be sure to check that out. I think a lot of stuff that Dr. Vaughn said and spoke about today will definitely apply to those endeavors as well. So appreciate you guys.